Suzanne Radford with an eye on health. Welcoming Keith Littlewood. He's back, rehabilitation and performance coach at Balanced Body and Mind, based at Scandinavian Health and Performance in JLT. Good morning to you, Keith.
Good morning, Suzanne.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
You know, time goes so fast in the UAE. I was in touch with you and I said, you know, it's been ages. Well, it's not been that long. Not long enough to have a baby, but apparently you've had a baby since we last met.
Another one. I just closed my eyes and all of a sudden I was a father of three. I don't know how that happened.
Well, congratulations to you and your lovely wife, Georgie, on the latest edition, Isabella, is it?
Yes, she's gorgeous.
Ah, oh, well, you know, and how's the boy taking to his new sister?
He gets a little bit jealous. He's like, daddy, no pickup, daddy, no pickup. But he, apart from that, he's getting used to it. He's very cool. He's very caring as well. So,
yeah. Well, you're looking remarkably well, considering you're a new dad again, you know. I mean, sleeping through, is she, through
she's,
the night?
She's been sleeping through for the last 2 or 3 weeks now. I think we've been very lucky with both our children. They've always slept through from 6 to 8 weeks. Please don't hate me for saying that, people.
I remember when Lucas was a baby, you were telling us here how you were making up his own, you were making the formula natural, all of that going on in your household. Is that the case with Isabella?
Well, I think we'd be fading out breastfeeding soon and moving to milk, and there's kind of a strategy I have with that that has a few things in it, such as milk with some gelatin and coconut oil and a little bit of ghee that has a lot of the kind of fat soluble nutrients that are important for kids, as well as some B vitamins as well. So yeah.
Well, Keith's here to take your questions on 4001. If you're in pain, if you're suffering when it comes to the balance of your body, whether it's internally, the digestion, issues with the gut, or physically, the way that you are performing in your life, are you feeling energized or are you feeling fatigued? We're going to be looking at some interesting points, as always, on your Facebook page you've been posting up. But again, since we last met, you've got your ebook, Improving Energy and Digestion Naturally.
Yes, I moved away from the way I used to address this, and I put the ebook together because there's a lot of information out there. I think the ebook's got about 17,000-18,000 words in, and it takes people through a lot of the lessons that I use within the coaching model. And it's about people who, through no fault of their own, they're probably experiencing digestion, sleep, energy, pain issues, and not knowing what to do it. So I put a lot of stuff in the book that generally people tend to respond better when they're coached through, when they have somebody sitting externally and looking at the mechanisms that are driving factors. So if you had a bad night's sleep and you wrote that down, and we saw that, for example, you had a really low carbohydrate meal and perhaps you didn't have enough energy in there, all of a sudden you've got someone telling you, hey, what about this? Maybe try doing this and let's see how you respond to that. But the book itself has just got a collection of information, and it's good. Good piece of referencing for people to have.
Well, I'm looking through some of the points and lessons that are included in the book, and so things like how to increase energy and eradicate fatigue, along with understanding and assessing your own energy and metabolism, what foods are important for energy and digestion, as you said, sleeping, using caffeine effectively, understanding thyroid function, sunlight for optimal health, using anti-stress nutrients. These are all points that come up in your ebook.
Yes, and there are a lot of things that we tend to ignore in our environment that actually can give us the capacity to heal and regenerate. Sunlight, for example, we often see a lot of people who are vitamin D deficient. Now that can come from people not being able to metabolize vitamin D or just not getting enough sunlight. And even if you don't get enough sunlight, there's certainly a lot of stuff that you can do by using red rays, for example, to regenerate. And the studies on something called photobiomodulation or low-level laser therapy are actually really convincing that using light as a healing therapy are out there, and you can perhaps take some of those notes and look at doing a lot of things and taking control of your health yourself.
So 4001 is that text number if you've got any questions for Keith this morning. I should ask you about getting rid of a cold, as you can tell possibly from my voice that I have a bit of a cold at the moment. But, you know, it's good to have a cold from time to time. We need that, don't we? It's good for the body. It shows that we're human and it shows that we're fighting infection, in that we need to kind of bring it up to get it out.
Yeah, if you weren't getting sick for years on end, you might have a bit of a worry. You want to have something that actually tests the not just the nervous system, but the immune system. How well do you function? And getting ill every now and then is a good sign that you have a good, healthy, functioning immune system.
So what do you recommend then for a cold?
Real basic stuff. Chicken soup, orange juice, sunlight and sleep.
I'm doing pretty well on that, actually. I've not had the chicken soup, but I was in search of it yesterday. But the traffic prohibitedly, it stopped me from getting to my destination where I know they do a good chicken soup. I know I should be making it myself, but maybe I'll get to that today. I don't know. Get the whole carcass and cook it all up. That's what you like, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I recommend less supplements and people taking control of their health by using foods that are available. Sometimes when people don't have the time or inclination to boil bones, you can actually get some really good gelatin supplements. Make your own jelly or just get a hydrolysate, a gelatin supplement that actually dissolves into a juice or a smoothie or something. But yeah, there are shortcuts and hacks, as people put it.
Just to ease and comfort one through the process, you've got to work through those stages of a cold. So today we're going to be looking at some of the really interesting findings that you've discovered and want to raise today. One that I found really interesting was skin and identifying pain in the skin. It's not something we necessarily think of. We think of pain in the muscles, in the joints, but actually what you'll want to talk about is skin pain and dysfunction, understanding our cells in our body, cellular health and metabolic issues related to that. So lots to talk about. We're getting into some technical areas of our physiology as well as the everyday stuff that we just want to know about. Let us know your thoughts, what you're feeling today. 4001 if you've got any aches or pains or struggling with digestion. Keith's here to take your questions. Keith Littlewood is here. He's a rehabilitation and performance coach based at Scandinavian Health and Performance. 4001 is that text number if you've got any questions, if you're facing any issues today when it comes to your physique, if you've got aches and pains, posture, fatigue or dietary issues, gut issues with the guts, then Keith's on hand to take your questions this morning. And I've got a competition. This is a great prize. 2 VIP tickets to the BBC Good Food Show Dubai 2015. It's taking place at the Sheikh Zayed Site or Hall at Dubai World Trade Center on December the 17th through to the 19th. And there is going to be James Martin, Paul Hollywood, Atul Kocha, Andy Bates, Sylvana Rowe and Ed Baines. And in fact, Ed Baines is going to be joining us on the Thursday brunch on the 17th from 11 o'clock in the morning. Now, you know, we love to talk about health and wellness. We love to talk about good food as well on the Thursday brunch. Well, you get to shop here at this event. You get to taste. You get to see these great chefs demonstrating their techniques on the main stages. This fantastic entertainment. So lots to look forward to that coming weekend, the 17th of December. All the information's online at bbcgoodfoodshowdubai.com. But it made me think, as we're talking today about a variety of things to do with our bodies, but what are the foods that you love to eat that make you feel good? Or what are the foods that you love to eat but they don't make you feel so good? Joe, our producer, was just saying, you know, I don't know why, but now I can't eat fish and chips. Used to love fish and chips, just can't digest fish and chips anymore. So do you have a similar story when it comes to the food that you like to eat, but you're finding you're not able to eat them so well, you're not digesting them so well? Let us know about that. Anything that you found, Keith, that you're not digesting so well like you used to?
I think when I was not feeling so well a while back, a few years ago, I found that wheat and gluten-based products were causing an issue. I'd get quite weight gain. I'd certainly get acid reflux. This is kind of a nice segue into talking about the cell damage response, is that when we have gastrointestinal issues, they might actually come from this decrease in our optimal function, and we certainly tend to hyperinflate the effects of gluten, or it's what called protein turnover or protein profiling. And what happens is that with gluten, we can experience problems based upon that. So a lot of people think they've always they have a problem with, say, dairy or gluten, for example. But in fact, what's happened is because there's been some kind of insult to the system, that's actually what's making it. People never had a problem with dairy before, but all of a sudden they're having a problem with dairy. They might get a sniffy nose or something. But it's actually the damage that's gone on to the stomach that maybe caused that. And that's something I noticed. And removing that, I found, actually has some good results. But I'm working with people. I think it's good to see and get a good idea of what's caused a problem long term, because sometimes when you see that there is a problem now, it's actually probably not the issue. It's just a symptom of something deeper.
And it is interesting, isn't it? I suppose it's a sign of getting older. I'll think of family members who will say, oh no, I don't have that. And you think, well, you used to eat that, but you don't eat that anymore. And it's almost with age, your taste buds change, and what you feel you can take and process into the body affects your choices. You no longer reach for certain things that you used to love to eat because you just know you don't feel good when you eat them.
Sure, and there can be a number of misnomers about food, and we certainly see a lot of things on the internet and social media memes that are often incorrect. So for example, sugar, for example, everybody seems to think that sugar is a real problem for people. But it's actually not the sugar, it's the way that the cells are processing. Sure, what I'm not saying here is eat diets that are really, really high in sugar, but at the same time, as Paracelsus said, the dose makes the poison. What we tend to eat in larger amounts can cause issues. If we had a really high meat diet, that might cause problems. If we had a high vegetable diet, we might have a problem with that, depending on the individual reaction to it. So we tend to be influenced by certain social media things as well. But you can certainly notice foods that might bring you down. You can certainly notice foods that lift you up. And they have biological implications. But what we want to do is trying to work through with each individual person about what actually finds that, what gives the results that makes them feel better. And more often, as the stomach and the cellular functions start to heal, they can actually start to tolerate a wider range of foods rather than becoming more reduced about what their diet is. And hence why, you know, food allergy tests really are a symptom of something that's a bigger implication, rather than saying, okay, you have sensitivities to all these foods, which is usually not correct.
So cell damage, just to explain to us what we're talking about here, CDR. So it's technical. I mean, I can understand on a layman's idea of cells, the body's made up of cells, but can you explain more what you're talking about when we're looking at how the cells get damaged?
Sure. The cell damage response is really an accumulative body of research that looks at bacterial, viral, parasitological issues, and it's mediated in a bit like the construct of health, where we have a physical, chemical and emotional structure. With the cell damage response, we have the same mechanisms. We have a chemical, we have a physical, and we might have a viral or bacterial factor that might cause some certain amount of damage that causes our body to respond in a protective manner to start with. So we might see a number of implications. For example, we might start to have issues with, let's say, insulin, for example. We might start having, despite eating a diet that's relatively, it's not excessive in calories, but the way that we process our calories becomes a problem. This because perhaps the thyroid has been damaged, or the way that the cells function and the ability to produce and store and use thyroid as well as blood glucose becomes a problem. So we have a number of factors.
And the thyroid's linked to your metabolism.
Thyroid's implicitly linked with metabolism. So a lot of people, then we start to see things or factors that cause problems with adrenal glands. So everybody seems to know these days about the stress response and how adrenaline is an issue. So we start to see adrenaline go up, we start to see cortisol go up. But this is in fact in response to the damage that's been going on, and we tend to look at reduced mechanisms to affect this CDR. We might say, okay, we need to start reducing the carbohydrate, but it's not the carbohydrate that's the problem, it's how the cells process the energy that's the problem. And that's when we start to look at this CDR in particular. There are a variety of other mechanisms that start to go awry. The way that we move minerals and metals in and out of the cells. So, for example, magnesium can be wasted, sodium can be wasted, and all of these things start to create a global response. We might start to see our gut microbiome, the flora in the bacteria in the stomach, become a problem. We start to throw different mechanisms like increasing the amount of probiotics or increasing the amount of a certain supplement, but it's not actually addressing the issue of the actual damage that's actually happened to the cell. And what I like to see and work with clients is, how do we bring about a holistic response? We're not talking about reducing and adding lots of supplements to the diet. We're talking about modulating how the cells work. This can take time. So somebody perhaps with weight gain, fatigue, energy, poor sleep, poor digestion, this isn't something where you're going to wave a wand, it's going to work overnight. But over time, this can start to resolve quite nicely.
So you can, you know, you can go back, you can reverse the damage that's been done.
Totally. It's possible. Everybody reacts in a certain different way, and everybody will take certain parts away from certain changes that work better for them. For some people, it might be eating more on a regular basis to soften the effect of low blood sugar levels. So a lot of people that I tend to see these days tend to go for a lower carb diet. Now, what are the implications of a lower carb diet? Well, actually, low carb diets tend to increase the stress response, because if you don't have enough adequate carbohydrate available, then we tend to go into a low blood sugar state. This increases the amount of adrenaline and then cortisol, which are hormones that regulate blood sugar levels. So if we don't have enough blood sugar available in the blood and then the liver, we release cortisol to stimulate the release of free fatty acids. Now, this can be problematic and it's quite stressful on the body. So people might notice with that is anxiety, fatigue throughout the day. So even doing something as simple as eating regularly throughout the day can be a great start in that. Finding sleep as well, for example. So people with sleep issues might be because they have either a lower carb diet, they're producing stress and anti-inflammatory hormones and inflammatory hormones at night that keep them awake. And trying to modulate their sleep response can be started with just simply getting food right.
So let us know the foods that you are loving, that you really enjoy and suit you, and maybe the foods that you're finding you can't digest so well. Maybe you used to, but now you find you have difficulty with them. Chris says, oranges, awesome. Fried food makes me feel sick. We'll address that, Chris, when we come back. Stay with us. Let me know the foods that you're really enjoying, that really suit you, or maybe the foods that are really not suiting you anymore. You're finding them really difficult to digest. Let us know. Keith Littlewood is here. He's a rehabilitation and performance coach. He has his website, Balanced Body and Mind, which is a very useful resource. He's also got his details of his ebook there, and he's based at Scandinavian Health and Performance. Lots of messages coming in, Keith. One here, somebody's saying, actually, just to come back quickly, we're saying at the top of the show that you're a new dad and you've got your little girl, and you were talking about breastfeeding, and somebody here is saying fading out breastfeeding at 6 weeks is early, but you didn't say that, did you?
No, I didn't. In fact, she's 12 weeks old and we are still breastfeeding, but thanks for your concern.
Yes, thank you. Chris says oranges are awesome, but fried food makes me feel sick.
Yeah, orange is a funny one, and I actively use orange juice because it's really high in vitamin C, and vitamin C is very protective and full of polyphenols, which is particularly good. Fried food, there's a particular mechanism why frying food isn't particularly great. Now, when you use unsaturated fatty acids, and a lot of people use so-called heart-healthy oils like canola and all these other vegetable oils. Now, when you heat vegetable oils, you tend to cause a certain amount of damage to the oils, and they go rancid. And these oils, when they hit the stomach lining and the digestive tract, can actually cause breakdown of tissues within the gut. So it's no surprise that frying food, particularly in unsaturated oils, is a problem. Cooking food in more saturated oils, that tends to be much more protective. Saturated fat is great, and you know it had that misnomer for many years that it caused a lot of problems. Now, high fat, if you don't utilize the calories, can cause problem. Excess calories can be a problem to some people.
Like Peter suggested, deep fried Mars bars.
Yeah, probably taste great. And if you had one a month, it probably wouldn't be so bad. But frying food does have a certain amount of connotations, and processed vegetable oils are problematic, and maybe one of the key implicators is why in processed foods they tend to cause some problems. But yeah, it's no, you know, frying foods, I think eating frying foods every now and then shouldn't be too much of a problem. If you have a little bit more vitamin E supplement, which helps to ameliorate the effects of frying foods. But, you know, frying foods once a week shouldn't be too much of an issue.
Okay. And if you are feeling that sort of nauseous sickness, then that's possibly why, how it's being cooked.
Well, yeah, nausea and sickness is a good sign that something isn't quite right.
Yeah.
A bit like fatigue or, you know, all of these kind of symptoms that you might get. So, you know, use your nails for that and maybe switch to frying another oil and see how you get on with that.
Yeah, and you know, some people will talk about, you know, and people are texting in, and we will get to these messages, you know, about indigestion or acid reflux, but actually saying I feel a bit sick after eating this food is a big indicator of something not being right.
Yes, and sometimes that can be linked back to a stressed digestive system not producing enough hydrochloric acid. But ultimately, again, sometimes when we reduce a lot of these systems, it might actually be down to low energy production, low thyroid production, or even increased adrenaline production that suppresses thyroid and will ultimately suppress how the digestive organs function.
Now, some people like myself don't do so well on orange juice. I've never been very good at being able to drink orange juice on its own. But there's many other ways you can get your vitamin C, right? Carrot juice. What else would you recommend?
Yeah, most fruits have plenty of vitamin C, and you know, a wide variety of fruits have it. You know, papaya, guava, mango, all of these kind of fruits, which are, and pineapple, have a high amount of vitamin C. And vitamin C is quite important because it's instrumental in turnover of gut mucosa. So having someone on a regular basis, for example, is quite important. And in fact, I remember posting not long ago, but a lot of people tend to go and have colon hydrotherapy and cleanses like that, and focus on replenishing the gut with probiotics, but actually having a higher amount of vitamin C and perhaps more amino acids in the form of bone broth is actually how we're going to replenish the gut mucosa, which is instrumental in how our immune system functions. Most of the immune system is housed in the gut mucosa, so that's quite important.
And somebody's saying about, is it a good idea to recommend orange juice because it's loaded with sugar? Now, I think this is a good one for you, Keith.
Yes. So I'm still at a loss why, if you actually look at the biological implications of sugar, why people tend to get upset about it. Human beings are well versed in producing genes that use carbohydrate. In fact, for about 200,000 years or so, the data's not exactly conclusive on that, they have been producing genes that make able to utilize carbohydrates on a very efficient way, and we have a wide range of using carbohydrates. The use of carbohydrate, and particularly sugar, not just sugar from the processed form but in the form of fruits, for example, is not only protective, but it's a very efficient way of generating energy using the oxidative system. So we use oxygen to burn carbohydrate. It can burn fat as a carbohydrate, as a fuel as well, but it's not as efficient. Carbohydrate will tend to produce more carbon dioxide. Now, carbon dioxide is actually very protective. If we tend to be low in carbon dioxide, it generally makes us not release as much oxygen from hemoglobin. So to keep the cells respiring and functioning at their optimal use, having adequate carbon dioxide from the use of carbohydrates is very important. Now, what a lot of people tend to be jumping on the bandwagon these days is there are a few inaccurate social media memes such as sugar causes cancer and sugar causes diabetes. It doesn't. What happens, for example, in cancer, we have a specific defect to the respiratory function of the cell, how the cell uses oxygen to utilize fuels. If that doesn't work properly, we switch to glycolysis. Glycolysis produces sugar, but also produces lactic acid. Lactic acid can increase the acidity in the cell and damage the cell. So it's not the carbohydrate as such. It's how we utilize the carbohydrate, and in particular sugar. Now, what you can actually say with this is, yes, eating a diet primarily high in loads and loads of sugar without having a balance of fat and protein could be problematic. The same way as if we just ate broccoli all the time. Eating broccoli has some great compounds in it, but also has some compounds similar to cyanide. So if we're eating lots of raw green broccoli all the time, we'd probably get sick as well. So we need to have a balance in our diet. So let's not shoot something in the foot like a carbohydrate, which actually gives us a lot of energy. And I see a lot of problems with people who have become carbophobes. Now, eating lots of starchy carbohydrates all the time can be a problem also. But if we balance out our nutrient intake with adequate amounts of carbohydrate, fat and protein, and we have someone whose cellular physiology isn't damaged, then carbohydrates remains an optimal fuel for the human body.
Anjana's here. Now, we just spoke to Anjana there a few minutes ago. Jo had a quick call to her. She's in the mall, so we couldn't get her on the line because it wasn't too clear a line. But she texted in to say, I just recently found that I have a major intolerance to lactose and eggs. My life has changed overnight. Now, apparently, she just found this out yesterday. She's in the mall at the moment. She's texted again to say, I'm looking at everything and everything's got some sort of lactose in it, or, you know, and it's really difficult to find things. She's saying goat's milk, sheep milk, all milk almond milk. I guess my morning chai tea with milk and sugar is out now. I've got to go looking for buffalo milk. God help me is what she says.
Well, like everything, context is a major player in this. And let's look at, okay, so you've gone to have probably a food sensitivity test done, which is an IgG4 test in most cases. Ig is the gold standard for looking at actual sensitivities to food. Now, what I talked about earlier on is, do you actually have a problem with the food, or does the food have a problem with you? Okay, so to make that simpler further, is that if you have damage to the stomach, let's, for example, the microvilli, if you wave your fingers up and down, that's what the microvilli are like. They're the lining of the stomach and the digestive system, such as the small and large intestine. So what tends to happen is that if you kind of take your fingers down, that's what happens. We lose our villi. Now, in the villi, we have lacteals. Lacteals produce lactase, which helps us to break down lactose. Now, if you have a damaged stomach, if you're not digesting your food properly, then you're going to have a problem with digesting lactose. Is lactose the problem? No, it's because your stomach is damaged. Egg white, for example, is quite tends to be, people tend to have a bit of an issue with egg white anyway. And it may be subclinical. It may be something that's relevant. Do we see actual real-time issues with it? Any hives? Do we see fatigue after eating it? So why did this person go and have this test done? What was the reason? Did they have energy, fatigue, weight gain? Was there a specific problem that they were having done? Or did somebody say, hey, let's just run a food allergy test. Let's see what comes up. I would rather not use those tests and try and find out what someone's metabolic rate is doing by assessing their temperature, taking their pulse rate, and see what's working in that manner, rather than say, hey, we've done a test here, this suggests this, but it's not a real indication of the cell and the human person and the organism and how that's functioning.
And what you're saying is, if there is damage there, and so the food isn't responding well to the gut, for example, and the damage has come about through possibly what, overeating certain foods or making you become more sensitive to certain foods?
So if we go back to the cell damage response, it could be a viral infection, it could be a bacterial infection, it could be childhood trauma or psychological stress, it could be physiological trauma from playing too much sport or an injury received from sport, it might be a parasite infection, it could be a number of different things. It could even lead to the fact that the environment, which poses a lot of problems with chemicals, benzene in the air is estrogenic and inhibits the thyroid. All of these things conspire against a lot of people. Some people react differently to it. Will you actually find out the key mechanism sometimes? Sometimes not. But can you do a lot to restore someone's biological wholeness and make them better to tolerate these foods again? Yes, you can. I think that's key.
Peter says, this was the person that sent in about the deep fried Mars bar, but he said, you know, I've switched to breakfast now, a healthy breakfast of natural yogurt, oats and fresh red fruits. Fantastic healthy start to the day. So that's good for you, Peter. Somebody else here is without a name is saying, I'm loving kiwis and I'm despising green peppers, capsicum.
Cook them, perhaps. Cover them in garlic and stuff.
Yeah, some nice herbs. Yeah. Yeah, why not? Like some olive oil.
I used to roast a lot of peppers and then throw some goat's cheese and meat in there with some like Italian herbs. That used to be quite nice.
Yeah, lovely, yeah. Lovely. And somebody else was saying about bell peppers and being a great source of vitamin C.
Yeah, it's funny because the person who discovered sorbic acid or vitamin C is the Nobel scientist Albert Saint-Georgi. And he was running around for years trying to find out what this compound was that was protective. And he's actually Hungarian. And he was trying to find this compound that was found in the adrenal glands, because a lot of vitamin C is stored in the adrenal glands. And it took him years. He was getting all of this stuff from desiccating people's adrenal glands, and found that when he went home and found that this compound was prolific in peppers, and so was the finding of vitamin C.
Let's go to the phone lines. We've got Denise there, and good morning to you, Denise.
Good morning,
Denise. What did you want to share with us this morning?
Oh, I was just really interested to listen to what Keith had to say. It's been a lot of the advice that I've been trying to sort of discover and learn about myself after, you know, years of stomach issues and fatigue issues since I was a child.
And when you say, you know, stomach...
Learning as you go along.
Yeah, learning as you go along. But Denise, you said you had stomach issues since a child. What sort of issues?
No one could really sort of work out what exactly was going on with me. So one moment, you know, dairy would be a problem, and then the next minute I'd have a headache or stomach pains, and that just continued through adult life, really, and fatigue got worse. So mostly just bloating and a lot of stomach pain and fatigue, and just trying to work out what it was. So it's, you know, been a process of sort of like eliminating different things over the years and trying to work out what works best. And it got to the point where, you know, I couldn't eat any fruit or couldn't have an onion or even any sort of onion powders. And it was just getting too restrictive. And that sort of, you know, sent me in the direction of trying to dig deeper and work out what was really going on.
So in that process of elimination and your sort of self, you know, learning yourself as you went along, what have you done? Because you say you're feeling better now. What have you been doing to help with this?
Just doing as much research as I possibly can on sort of like new findings. And these new findings just sort of took me back to realizing that needed to sort of go back to the kitchen, really, and introducing sort of older fashioned foods. So I've been making a lot of bone broths and just eating things that are a lot more gentle, you know, on the system itself, and going back to vegetables. So I'm still not having fruit at the moment, but just my energy levels and the stomach issues have pretty much gone away completely. And going back to more basic carbohydrates, so really looking at, you know, like sweet potatoes and just a lot more vegetables, and trying to get sort of, you know, as much nutrients into my system as I can.
Keith.
Sure. It's always a good start to get a lot of good homemade food in. I often find that a lot of people who tend to not have the carbohydrates, it tends in the form of fruit, it tends to be the missing link. A lot of people do tend to get scared of the fruit because of their so-called sugar content. But what we can see from what we've talked about today is that fruit does provide a lot of energy for people, and it's usually the damage to the system that maybe people tend to ferment sugars in the gut, and that can be a problem. But it's good, you know, I wouldn't be scared of even bringing in, you know, good potatoes into the diet as well, because that can give you a lot of energy, and it's, once it's well cooked, it's really, really easily digested. But bone broth, I think I've been waxing lyrical about that for 5 years or 4 years since being on the show, and using oil, saturated fats like coconut oil, ghee, perhaps not palm oil these days because we're seeing the ecological impact of palm oil. But it sounds like you're doing the right things. A lot of people do tend to kind of start looking at fermenting foods, and I think fermenting foods are a double-edged sword depending on the person as well. But what other things are you doing as well?
Yeah, well, actually, I've been practicing making fermented foods, so definitely moving in that direction, and slowly adding in some fruits. And I think, you know, the healing process is, you know, really well on its way now, and just looking forward to being able to have, you know, some of these extra things like fruits. I've been adding in some normal potatoes again, and just really sort of exploring the kitchen, really. And making a lot of like different smoothies and adding in like coconut and coconut oils and sweet potatoes and lots of spinach, and just adding in what I can when I can. And I've just recently tried the Camus for vitamin C, and I'm really enjoying that.
What's that? Yeah, sorry, Denise, what was that?
The Camus powder.
Oh, Camus powder, right, yeah, yeah. And that's working well for you, is it?
It seems to be.
Excellent.
Yeah,
excellent. Yeah. What I'm really loving about this, Denise, and it's you're a great example, really, in that you've identified issues. And as Keith was saying earlier, it's not something that you can eradicate or sort out overnight, but it takes time. But you've stuck at it. And I love the fact, like you said, you've got back into the kitchen, exploring different foods and ingredients and figuring out what you can create and make and what's working well for your body and system, which I think is a really good example for everybody else.
Yeah, and I think I really had to take a step back mentally as well and just realise I needed to be patient with myself and, you know, not think, oh, I must never eat fruit again, and, yeah, just you know, be kinder to myself, you know, in more ways than one. Yeah.
Are you one of these people, because I must admit I tend to do this a little bit, Keith, and you know, it's a difficult one, in that if you think you've got an issue and you sort of address that issue and then you feel better, it's like you forget, I do anyway, I forget how I felt when I wasn't feeling so good, and then I start picking up those bad habits again. I start, you know, eating certain foods or too much of certain foods, and then I start not feeling so well again, and it's a bit of a cycle. And so as you were saying about being kind to yourself, it's also very much a mental thing as well as a physical response, isn't it?
Definitely, definitely. And that's definitely something, you know, that I'm still learning and but enjoying. Whereas in the past, perhaps I would have, you know, been a bit unhappy with perhaps poor choice that I've made. But now just sort of learning to move on and crack back on with it.
Well, it's fantastic. And thank you very much for connecting with us today, and all the best with it. And keep feeling good and keep building on that feel good factor. Thanks, Denise.
Thanks so much.
Have a good day.
Okay, you too.
I think also, Keith, what Denise is highlighting there, and I'm sure you must find this, is that we have to take responsibility individually for ourselves. You said earlier, sometimes people want a pill to pop or an overnight solution, and it's about really working on changing lifestyle habits and working on yourself, possibly forever. It's a constant thing that you have to be connected to.
Yeah, and I think also making time, like Denise said, about getting in the kitchen. There's a standard joke in our household that I go, right, Saturday afternoon, I'm going to be stuck in the kitchen all day. Georgia, you need to look after the kids. Because I go in there, stew some apples, make some shepherd's pie for Lucas's, you know, nursery meals, and make a roast. And so we've got some cold cuts and stuff left over. So for a good two or three meals, we've got something that we can rely on. And there's enough stewed apple for a few days that we can have throw in the morning. So get you know, if you're someone who's so busy, have someone who can get into the kitchen for you. But it, you should, everybody should know how to cook some food and to look after themselves. It's not hard to do that. And getting good quality food in it, and food that supports what your body's having to go through throughout the week.
Lots of messages. We'll get to them when we come back. One here: thanks for the great topic. My stomach almost is about to burst from expansion when I eat oranges or tangerines. Their juices are worse. Also, I get stomach bloats. Have my own, and having my own homemade cakes. So asking what the problem is. So we'll address that. They're all very similar in this way. People that are responding badly to certain foods, and also asking about vitamin D. You mentioned vitamin D earlier, so we'll address that as well. 4001 is that text number. All of Keith's details are up on our website as well if you want to find out more about what he's posting on his Facebook page along with his ebook. Check it out, Keith Littlewood there online at Balanced Body and Mind. Stay with us. Keith Littlewood joins me. He's a rehabilitation and performance coach of Balanced Body Mind. He's based at Scandinavian Health and Performance in JLT, and he's here to take your questions on 4001. If you're suffering from pain, if you have mobility issues, maybe joint, or indeed if you've had injuries, maybe through sport or through work or whatever, then Keith can help you with that. Also when it comes to the gut and digestion. And we've been looking at cellular, CDR, cell damage response, and the reasons why you might respond badly to certain foods and certain types of eating and meals. And we've been having quite a big discussion this morning on the foods that we're liking, that we're enjoying, that are suiting us, and the foods that don't suit us so well anymore. And you've been joining in on that conversation, so continue with that on 4001. And we're going to be looking at mobility issues, as well as looking at the skin, actually pain, skin pain, and how that can be linked to the body's dysfunction. But just to clear up a few more messages, Keith, we were talking about, you touched on vitamin D earlier. Leon's saying, what time is the best time of the day to get your dose of vitamin D, and how long should we be in the sun for?
Well, it's obvious out here it's dependent on the certainly the time of day and the heat that's available, but generally getting sun in the morning before 12 o'clock is really ideal. We can actually get a lot of vitamin D from the sun. Some people don't regulate vitamin D as well. That can come from a low calcium diet, perhaps. Sometimes when, again, with the cell damage response, the ability to regulate, the liver becomes quite sluggish, and the ability to regulate and uptake vitamin D becomes problematic as well. So I think getting sun, at the moment, you could tolerate an hour of sunlight, no problem. With weather today, you're not going to get much at all. But certainly this time of year. But even during the summer times, getting out for 10-15 minutes in the morning, or just at the end of the day as the sun's going down, it's still quite powerful. Somebody said to me once that the quality of the sun out here is different. I find that hard to believe, because the sun is pretty much the same around the planet. It can be extremely hot when you're in the right place, and getting vitamin D from what essentially is ultraviolet light is quite easy from sunlight. Sometimes if we do have a compromised metabolism or the ability to regulate vitamin D, that can be a problem. Some people I've seen recommending super physiological doses of 100,000 IUs in a week, which can be a real problem if you can't process that vitamin D. Getting vitamin D from sunlight should be people's number one source, and not from supplemental vitamin D.
It's interesting, actually. My mum had all sorts of issues, and we were all quite worried about her, and she went through all different tests. Do you know what it was? It was vitamin D deficiency, and she's completely changed. She feels so much better. Everything's working well for her at the
moment. People even suggest that vitamin D has a hormone-like status, and we still don't know enough about certain nutrients and compounds, whether they're actually hormones or vitamins. Still lots to learn.
Yeah, for sure. Em's saying, great to hear you guys together on the show again. Thank you very much, Em. And congratulations to Keith and his family.
Why, thank you very much.
And interested to hear your opinion on psyllium husk for the digestive system.
Okay, psyllium husk. What we tend to think about digestion is that sometimes we don't have enough high-fibre foods. But if you look at some of the compounds in high-fibre, they can be quite problematic. Now, psyllium husk, the concept of a high-fibre is that it absorbs a lot of water and pushes the stool through the digestive system. If you eat lots of easily digestible foods, such as ripe tropical fruits, take away foods that perhaps inhibit digestion. If you're eating lots of nuts and lots of raw green vegetables that are notoriously hard to break down, you might have issues related to poor digestion. Now, a lot of practitioners will tend to go and recommend lots of fibre, you know, the bran fibres or these psyllium husks to help push the digestive system through. But I often find that if you actually remove that ability to block up the digestive passageway, it's a much more effective mechanism. So it's a bit like, as well, when we talk about having lots of fibers and grains, well, they actually cause a lot of destruction to the bowel lining when we're consuming a lot of these fibers, because they don't break down that well. And in some cases, there are some studies as well that have showed that having lots of these high fiber compounds can cause bowel problems in themselves. So I've never recommended psyllium husk. I never have and never will, because I find there's an easy way of taking away foods that cause digestive dysfunction and increasing lots of easily digestible foods. Remember, if we get enough energy from our foods, it increases how our hormones function, increases the amount of energy available, and it increases how the muscles work around the digestive system. So the digestive system, it might not be a good idea to increase the amount of undigestible foods that are being taken into the digestive system. So my answer would be, I don't use it, but I know a lot of people that do.
Marco, you sound like me. He says, I love peanuts, and they give me chronic heartburn, but I still eat them. So like I was saying before, about when you know something's not good for you, and maybe you feel better when you're not eating them, but then you forget and then you start eating them again because you just like them, but then you don't feel so good afterwards.
I love a nice piece of buttered toast with Bovril, and it gives me the worst heartburn ever, but I have to do it. And when I go home next week, I'll be having a nice big piece of toast with Bovril and butter and a cup of tea.
You see, we were talking earlier in the week about nostalgia. It's just you're putting back into that. It's a cold country back home for Christmas in the UK, and there you go, you have your toast and Bovril. Also here, somebody, we'd mentioned this before, let's talk about this person, Mariam, saying, my stomach almost about to burst from expansion when I eat orange or a tangerine, and juices are worse. I also get stomach bloats having my own homemade cakes. What could the problem be?
Well, bloating as such usually comes from a number of different reasons. Ultimately, sometimes when we don't digest food, we start to bloat. Low levels of stomach acid can cause us to bloat because we're just simply not breaking the nutrients down effectively. So with cakes and that, what a lot of people tend to use is a lot of nut flours or other flours like that, which actually are really hard to digest. Sometimes they're kind of grass-based flours as well, which contain a lot of cellulose. Cellulose is, as a human being, you're not going to break cellulose down. And that's why sometimes people, when they have, say, the gluten-free pizzas, for example, have just as many problems, lots of gas, lots of bloating. Because when you have a cellulose base, unless you have four stomachs, like your average cow, you're not going to break cellulose down. And it's a lot of animal digestive systems are really good at breaking this down. Humans are not good at breaking cellulose down. Regarding the citrus fruits, some people just do have an issue with citrus fruits. Some people do honestly have too much acid issues. It's not always the case with excessive acid in citrus. It can be just an individual reaction. When you do notice individual reactions like that, pull them out for a period of time, get other foods going. If we can get foods that you have a less harder time dealing with, then it makes a lot of sense to pull them out for the short term. But the cakes and that, it makes a lot of sense why they're still bloating with those homemade cakes. Mm-hmm. Because of these compounds in the flours.
Smeet's asking, is it true that the metabolism goes into like a shock, causing inflammation when we run out of high sugars in the blood?
When we run out of sugar generally, our metabolic rate will decline. Now, some people talk about ketogenic dieting and fat adaptation, but using fat as a fuel is more stressful than using carbohydrate. So our metabolism won't shut down as such, but we will experience a stress response by producing hormones that make us liberate energy from stored fats. So usually combining all three parts of, you know, macronutrients such as fat, protein and carbohydrates remains much better. Now people, if you lose sugar, then ultimately you'll experience hypoglycemia or low levels of blood sugar. It's quite interesting that a lot of clients who I see who've been on this so-called healthy diet, eating low carbohydrate diets, often suffer from sleep. Now the liver should be able to store enough glycogen or sugar available in the liver to give us a good 8 hours sleep. Now, a lot of people tend to wake up in the middle of the night, and that's usually because the blood sugar is not there to keep a sleep response. There are other mechanisms behind sleep, such as serotonin and histamine, a neurotransmitters of wakefulness. So if we're producing high levels of serotonin and histamine, we're not going to get to sleep very quickly, and we're not going to get into this REM sleep where we get a lot of healing and processing going on of a lot of other things that have been going on in the body. So if you're not getting enough adequate sugar before sleep or energy from carbohydrates and other foods, then you can have a stress response. And that's why sometimes those people wake up at night with a start, and it's that cortisol being released to liberate energy from fat.
When we come back, we'll be looking at the skin and how maybe if you feel pain in the skin, this could be a link to some sort of dysfunction in the body. We'll be finding out from Keith about that. Also, how we're influenced by the environment. You touched on this earlier, Keith, but I want to come back on benzene in the environment, the effects of Wi-Fi, of phones. Can that alter our body's physiology when it comes to our responses and hormonal function? You've got some interesting findings there, so stay with us. Let me share this message with you. I'm 42 years of age and I weigh 50 kg and have three children, and I'm quite active. I have hypothyroidism, for that I'm taking L-troxine 50 mtcg since for the last 4 years, and my levels are normal now because of it. I'm suffering geographic tongue problems since for the last 10 to 12 years. The doctors told me this is not related to anything, but I noticed that if I have a high carbohydrate diet, it aggravates the problem, and fruit and vegetable diets make it less visible, but it never goes completely. I'm tired of trying so many remedies. Can you suggest anything? So first off, Keith, geographic tongue problems. I've never heard of this.
Well, that's certainly not my area of expertise, but you can see changes to the contours, the shapes and the colouring of the tongue, which could come from some systemic issue possibly related to the digestive system. Again, it's not my area of expertise, so I can't really comment on it. But if we put the other things together, possibly related to hypothyroidism. First of all, I'm not a doctor. I can't diagnose. And this is more merely a suggestion that you should probably go ahead and look up some stuff and maybe have conversations with your doctor about. If your thyroid hormone is working effectively, you will have a good body temperature between 36.6 and 37 degrees, and usually with a good pulse rate of around about 70 beats per minute. That's a good way of assessing the impact of thyroid hormone. TSH markers alone are not a particularly accurate, or those considered gold standard by a lot of doctors, they're not the most accurate way of determining how effective thyroid hormone is working. Now, the reason that she might have issues with a higher carbohydrate diet is because still what's going on in the gut. Now, we can have lots of issues in the gut that might make what you do is you ferment your carbohydrates. This can be from an imbalanced gut flora. Now, when we talk about imbalanced gut floras, we can have a number of issues. For example, a lot of females suffer from high estrogen. Estrogen-like compounds can proliferate in the bowel, and this can have a large impact on how our body, particularly our digestive system, works as well. So sometimes determining the bacteria in there. Now, bacteria, we think about even the beneficial probiotics such as lactobacillus, bifidobacter, high amounts of those can cause specific problems because they can ferment. They can cause large amounts of lactic acid. And this is why I talk about sometimes fermenting foods. Fermenting foods are great as a condiment here and there, but eating large amounts of them day in, day out can cause problems because they produce a lot of lactic acid, and so can gut bacteria. So if there's a certain gut bacteria that's causing a problem, you might find these issues proliferate. And a lot of people go on candida-killing diets because we see this furry tongue. But the candida is not the problem. Candida is just proliferating because the immune system is not able to keep the candida in check. So totally eradicating carbohydrates can be a problem, because there is some research that suggests that candida will also bury its roots into the lining of the stomach and into the blood vessels, permeating the gut even further. So there's a few issues to look at with that. But, you know, sometimes also adding a raw grated carrot into the diet with a little bit of coconut oil and salt can help to remove excess amounts of bacteria, certainly endotoxin, which can be a problem as well, and help to kind of de-estrogenize the bowel. And I use that with clients a lot, with some great effects with just raw grated carrot once a day between meals. It's very effective, and this lady might like to try that. But then obviously we need to confirm that the thyroid is working effectively. There aren't other perpetuating issues, emotional issues, stress, chemical sensitivities and a multitude of other things that would need clearing.
you mentioned earlier, let's come back on this regarding how the environment can affect our bodies and hormones. And you mentioned benzene in the environment, and this, I think, was linked to estrogen as well. Explain that more.
Well, benzene in itself, that you have soot and compounds in the air that can be defined as problematic. They can be estrogenic. Though we know that high levels of estrogen are problematic and actually can be precursors to cancers. There's no doubt about that, and the research certainly confirms that. So when we're breathing in soot-like compounds, they are in fact estrogenic. When I say estrogenic, what they help to do is lower cellular function. So that is one of the many factors in environment. And when you do an organic acid test, you will usually see that benzene is one of the many compounds that's being turned over and excreted by the body. Now, the level at which the body is efficient at turning over and excreting these compounds is one of the things that keeps us healthy. Sometimes we see people start to gain weight because their inability to detoxify and, most importantly, regulate cellular function is compromised from these compounds. The world is becoming a very dirty place, and the human organism is suffering. There's no doubt about that. There are plenty of things that you can do within your health to take charge of that. And it's all about damage limitation. But we also have to take on into account the concept of hormesis. Some bad stuff or some less than optimal compounds help to stimulate immune and neurological function for the better, but we really don't know what those levels are, and they tend to be a knife edge for each person.
So where the environment might be dirty or toxic, we've talked before about plastic in our water bottles, that kind of thing, that can be a toxicity that can affect you.
Yes, and toxins, people go, toxins, they are everywhere.
Yeah, they are everywhere.
Even food contains natural toxins. So we've talked about broccoli before. Broccoli in the diet is a great thing. But eating lots of broccoli contains toxins that can actually inhibit thyroid gland. And we know that brassica vegetables are thyroid disruptive. So a person who's suffering from thyroid problems, for example, doesn't want to have a diet that's high in lots of broccoli and brassica and sprouts and cauliflower, for example. So we need context for each person. Now, we have a lot of environmental issues. There's a recent study that's come out and backed up something that I've been talking about a long time that shows that it was a study that was conducted on rats, and people can say, well, we can't draw our data assumptions and conclusions because it is a rat, but they are vertebrates. They have a very similar DNA to us. But Wi-Fi, for example, is starting to cause a lot of issues, and we're starting to see a lot of oxidative stress. Now, what is oxidative stress? It's basically a mechanism that increases the oxidation of certain compounds and creates something called reactive oxygen species. Reactive oxygen species in itself isn't a problem because it's part of a cellular communication processing, and only 1% of reactive oxygen species actually causes a problem. But at the same time, we're noticing that Wi-Fi is increasing the amount of oxidative damage. And the studies that were conducted on these rats over 2 years shows that during the incubation period for pregnant rats, because you start to take on a lot more water, you have a certain susceptibility to electromagnetic stress. So we're looking at not only the maternal impacts to fetal stress, but also onto long-term use of people holding phones. Now, there's a really good website, I think it's Australian Wi-Fi in Schools, that has got a tremendous amount of research from the World Health Organization classification that Wi-Fi is a potential carcinogen. Being exposed to certain electromagnetic frequencies can cause problems, and we still don't have significant longitudinal data on that, but it is posing a problem, and the research is suggesting it's becoming more of a problem because it was possibly affecting certain key hormones within the rats over the 2 years, and suggestion that even longer than that could pose even further problems. I think there's a lot that we can do with Wi-Fi. Just get so many clients who come, they have their phone by the side of their bed at night. Turn it off. Best you can do is put it on plane mode. You don't need to be checking messages at night. Keep it away from your room. Turn your Wi-Fi off as well. If you go to Wi-Fi search, and if you live in a flat or apartment, you might find 10 different Wi-Fi signals coming. The best thing that you can do is turn it off. I've even had clients who have their Wi-Fi router underneath their bed. And it's a silent insult to the body. Now, short-term doses probably isn't going to do much, but when we're exposed to it long-term for a long period of time, this is going to be, I think, and I've said this before, probably the same impact that lung cancer and smoking had a similar correlation. And I think as the Wi-Fi signals get stronger, we're going to see more cellular signaling of the body becoming disrupted, and this causing problems over long-term.
just think about it. When you are on your phone, if you're using your phone a lot, particularly at home at night, do you notice any change in your body, in your mood, or even in sensation within the body, maybe in the fingers or even around the mouth or the cheek or the, you know, any part of the body, in fact? Do you notice that or not? Let us know your thoughts. It's quite big statements being made there. But I'll tell you what we'll do is we'll post up on our website, on the health page, links to that website as well, Keith, for people to do their research and to see for themselves what's been discussed. And I know that you were saying that schools, nursery schools, have been taking on board some of this research and how they are, where and how they're placing Wi-Fi within schools in close proximity to children.
Yeah, and if you look at the, I think this is really good website to look at with the Australian Wi-Fi in schools, and I think France has actually taken the step years ago to ban Wi-Fi in schools because on the developing brain they know that it's having certain effects. And I presented the information to my son's nursery where the Wi-Fi router was on a wall close to the, where the kids were sleeping, and I think one of the things that they actually said, thanks very much, we're going to actually change it to cabling for the reception Wi-Fi's and that. And I think that's a great decision. There are going to be lots of things that our young ones are exposed to over the years, and the world is getting a dirty place. We look at China and Beijing at the moment and the problems with pollution there. I think last year alone in the UK, 30,000 people died of pollution-related incidences. This is going to get worse. Wi-Fi is one of those potential things. It's not something to start getting stressed about and worried and neurotic, but just let's try and take charge of the
aware.
Things that we can change, and let's try and impact on people who make the decisions about you know, global implications of health. You know, corporate responsibility lies not just on making money for lots of different people, but it's how it impacts the world's health and an individual's health. And I don't think that's taken on board enough by a lot of people.
Now, Keith Littlewood is here with an eye on health. He's a rehabilitation and performance coach at Balance Body Mind. That's his website. He's a great resource. He's also got his ebook. Details of how to find out more about his ebook is there. We've linked that to our website as well. And he's based at Scandinavian Health and Performance in JLT. We've also put up an article that Keith wrote. We were just talking before there about the environment and how that might be impacting on our health, and in particular looking at and concerns around Wi-Fi, the use of the smartphone, and how that can actually be changing our bodies and affecting our bodies hormonally. So Keith's written an article about that. We posted up that up on our health page as well. So Keith, you know, along with all the stuff that you do with regards to gut and gut health, you also of course are looking at the function of the body, the mobility of the body, and how people can be pain free. And you've been looking at some stuff to do with pain and the skin and the function of the body.
Sure, yeah, I've used a couple of modalities, and that's something I'm still currently studying. So I'm a neurokinetic therapy instructor, and I also use a technique called proprioceptive deep tendon reflex. And it's a very good way of tapping into the body, of finding out how dysfunction is manifesting itself. Now, a lot of therapies tend to work on, okay, there's a joint that's fixed, or there's a muscle that's not working. It's either strong and it's weak and it's not functioning properly. But the skin, for example, is a great source of feedback for the body. So you have exteroreceptors in the skin, just like you have proprioceptors in the body, to give us a kinesthetic sense. And sometimes these sensors can go off, so we can have pain issues. So, for example, imagine when you hurt yourself and you withdraw without pain. Well, that's called a neospinal thalamic response. It's that short, less than a second pain response. Then if it's something that's caused damage, we might get a longer aching pain. So then this is called a paleospinal thalamic response. All that essentially means is new versus old pain. Sometimes we can get these pain receptors that are a little bit fuzzy, and that's why we end up with long-term pain. So going in to treat with, say, just deep tissue massage, for example, might give us a short-term release. It decreases nociception. It decreases the fuzziness. But that often comes back when we put the dysfunction, even as simply as just walking away from, say, a massage or something, we might feel worse again. So what I tend to do is look at how ligaments function. For each ligament in the body, they have specific effects on a muscle. So going in to treat a muscle, for example, can give us some results, but it's not truly addressing the underlying dysfunction. So what I like to do is assess different pain pathways. I assess how ligaments are impacting on muscle function. And a lot of people who tend to have a lot of issues that are long-term, I see a lot of clients who've been to see a lot of people. And sometimes when we can start to resolve how the ligaments are functioning with each other, what's the effect of the ligament on the muscle, what's the effect of the joint on the muscle, how that person's moving, moving, you can start to resolve a lot of things. And I've worked with a lot of clients, from Emirati doctors recently to children who perhaps maybe were put in a baby walker when they were younger, or to a lot of people who overuse and underuse their body. And it's a great way of going in and finding out exactly what's going on and treating the body by getting to the specific dysfunction in the body.
It's fascinating, isn't it? Really is. And also, I think in your field and area of work, something that actually has been around for many, many years, but maybe in our sort of consciousness not so apparent, when you your work as a rehabilitation and performance coach, and the functional work that you do.
Yes. I mean, we tend to treat pain and injury is something we tend to be quite reactive about. So people generally come and see you when they have pain. But if you take a really good history of someone, you can find out the prime reason why usually people have the problems. I often get clients to go back as young as they can remember, and they forget. You might come out, oh yeah, I forgot I had an appendectomy 40 years ago. Well, that appendectomy scar has never been resolved because the scar tissue is creating fuzziness that shuts down how the core muscles work. You have clients who've had episiotomies and C-sections, and that specific scar has never been resolved. So imagine when you cut through the skin, you're cutting through an exteroreceptor. When you cut through the muscle, you're affecting different fibers in the muscle. Sometimes you have to cut through ligaments as well and tendons, and that creates certain feedback issues, and addressing those specific feedback issues can address how the client's having problems with. Now, if you have multiple things, then going back and clearing all of those things can be particularly useful. But usually you find, take for example, I had a client the other day. She didn't think she had much wrong with her. But when you actually schooled her, a really bad fall onto her lower back when she was about 10. She then had an appendectomy, I think, 2 years before that. She had two spine surgeries, which probably were linked to the actual fall and the appendectomy. If you think about multiple insults over time, she didn't have a core to stabilize her during her teen years. And then throw two C-sections in with that as well, and you have a very unstable core and a very unstable back. So going back and treating specific dysfunctions that are actually unrelated to the current injury may actually get you the resolve that you're looking for. And there's a way of assessing the nervous system and putting the right input in that actually changes the body within a very short space of time. I usually say to clients, if I haven't been able to fix the primary issue within 5-6 sessions, then we need to get someone else involved. That's the way I would see it, because I think the body's capable of change very quickly.
And why do the two things go together? The work that you do in pain management and function of the physical body, the mobility of the body, and then the gut?
It's interesting. As we all know, everything's interconnected. And we have a lot of reduced systems that people just look at the digestive system or people just look at, say, the pain. But there are strong correlations between the whole system. I'm constantly torn between my work, because next year I'm studying, I've applied to do an MSc in endocrinology or clinical pain management. And when the answers come back about what I can do, I'm going to make. But I'm constantly torn. Do I just keep going down pain movement functional improvements to structural health, or do I get totally down the endocrinology route? And I keep having this kind of pull, but I think I'm probably going to keep doing both. I have a specific goal from an academic view where I want to be with a few things, but the understanding that our emotional system, which is probably the most powerful system of all, we all understand that pain can come from emotional issues. We understand that it can come from chemical issues and insults, biochemical, from the way our body regulates chemicals to the environmental inputs. And then there's the structural stuff. Somebody who probably does too little exercise and there's not good communication, from the person that does too much exercise. And I tend to work with people who have all of those things, and there's no specific person that's an ideal candidate, because everybody has issues that are related to those factors.
Dominic's asking about orange juice or oranges. Are they bad for children with seasonal asthma?
I honestly don't know. Some people react with kind of, you know, asthma or issues related to an intolerance. Sometimes you sometimes see a lot of people who are wheezy from eating certain foods. So the easiest way to check that is to get them to eat an orange, unless they're having a really bad anaphylactic reaction. The it shouldn't cause too much of a problem. I think asthma is more related. If you look at the research on, say, the cell damage response, it's probably related to something deeper seated. And having a food that might have a trigger is an immunological reaction. So it's worth exploring. To just, if you have a child and they do react to things, it's a great way of finding out what the food is, and just try them. Just try them with it. And some people suggest that with certain foods, that even using small amounts over a period of time can help tolerance of that. But when you have increased histamine, increased serotonin, these can raise the problems that cause the issues with the food.
You've got your ebook, Improving Energy and Digestion Naturally, and on there is one of the things that comes up in this ebook is caffeine and how to use caffeine effectively. And someone's texting here saying, my husband drinks double and triple espressos every day. What kind of effect can it have on his body on a long term or short term?
Well, again, it's context and the dose makes the poison. So caffeine in itself is a great pro-metabolic substance. It has pretty good protective qualities that have been borne out time and time again in studies. Anti-Alzheimer's, anti-cancer, it protects DNA from breaking. There's a lot of positive things. Having high amounts of anything can be a problem. Caffeine, for example, if you're having it all the time and it's there in the stomach, it can have certain issues related to stress. Remember, caffeine, if you're drinking coffee all the time, for example, and you don't have enough adequate blood sugar levels available, you're going to be perpetuating the stress response. So when I have clients to drink coffee, they have sugar in it, or they have it with food. Having coffee on its own all the time is not particularly great for the body. In fact, coffee's particularly great for impacting the amount of iron that's taken up. Sometimes high levels of iron is implicated in the issues with eating lots of red meat. That's a whole other subject in itself. But having coffee with food is generally quite a good thing to do. Some people don't react well to caffeine, as I said, because they have low blood sugar levels. And these feelings of anxiety and stress and shakiness is because you don't have enough blood sugar to balance out the pro-metabolic effects of caffeine.
So again, if you're eating something or drinking something and not feeling right and not feeling good, then that's an indicator. So pull back on it. Don't have so much of it.
People do use caffeine to prop themselves up sometimes, but that's usually when the body's particularly stressed out. Having one, two, perhaps even three cups of coffee a day isn't going to be bad. But certainly double and triple espressos at a time is not going to be particularly great. Probably with mood-related stuff, you might see irritability with these kind of issues. And certainly when you're going to low blood sugar states, anxiety with kind of sometimes coupled with irritability and irrationality can be there as well. But that can also correlate with increased gut issues as well.
Someone here saying, I've had bad breath problems since a child. I'm 36, female, with two children. It's not related to oral hygiene, as I follow good hygiene. No diabetes and no acidity problems. What could it be an indicator of?
Yeah, it could be something going on in the gut. It could be a bacterial issue in the gut. You know, even trying the raw grated carrot salad could be a help with that. I don't know for sure. There could be bacterial issues in the throat. There could be a number of things. But sometimes something going further on down in the digestive system might be the issue with that.
Mm. And somebody was asking about their child who is 14, a boy, and they've been to lots of different doctors. He has eczema. Is there anything with your line of work that might help or assist with eczema?
I think there's certain things that you can do to see the responses of the digestive system and certain foods. Are there certain foods that make it worse? Are there issues related to certain fats that might be a problem within the body? Is there a specific irritant? Are they digesting the food that well? Do they have the symptoms related to fatigue, energy? Do they sleep okay? Is there something else that sets it off as well? So there's certainly, if it's more of an observational thing to start with, coupled with a few mechanisms that are known to improve digestive health and perhaps lowering the amount of bacteria or increasing a certain amount, depending on the client. It's a very open question.
And you know, with your work with the functional body, you know, physical movement and what you work with people on pain, and then the work with the gut, do you find with exercise, and obviously we want to promote good health and exercise and it's healthy to exercise, where do you have issues with people exercising too much, or where have you found exercising more can really help the function internally of the body?
Everybody needs to move. There's no doubt about that. Doing key movements where you push, pull, bend, twist, squat are fantastic. Even walking and running provide good responses. People, when they're kind of more stressed out, actually need slightly less exercise. We can use exercise as an escape, as a cathartic means. But sometimes when we've got that high overload, even dropping back to doing half an hour of exercise training and some walking is going to be really beneficial, and understanding what mechanisms are bringing us down. But everybody needs to exercise. But the things I tend to see, generally the problems with people who don't exercise and people who exercise too much present with the same issues, because you're talking about ligamentous strains, you're talking about inactivity sometimes from certain muscles being overused. Certainly in different sports and exercise you can see certain repetitive strain stuff, but generally everybody presents with the same stuff. Ankle dysfunction, which basically has an impact up the whole chain. You have poor core function from people who don't exercise and people who overexercise. People often go in and do a core workout, but just because you're training the abdominal muscles doesn't mean you're putting more dysfunction into the system. And it's really about clearing the previous inputs or insults to the system that gets the change with everybody. So whether you exercise too little or too much, you're probably going to come in with the same types of injuries, unless they're trauma-based from a particular sport or activity.
Keith Littlewood, always a pleasure talking with you. Thank you very much for your time today. I know you're heading back to the UK for a few weeks for the festive season. What's next for you in 2016?
Well, I've got a few studies lined up. I'm going to Poland to study some neuroscience, and I've got a 3-month course in neuroscience, and next year starting an MSc. Like I said, the topic is yet to be decided on, either endocrinology or clinical pain management. I haven't quite decided yet. We'll see where it takes me. A few things to do. I just love seeing clients. That's my thing. I love seeing people get changes from the misery they've had in the past. So I'll keep working on that. I've probably got a couple of other ebooks up my sleeve, which I'm going to put out next year, and a few other things. I'm teaching a couple of courses. So busy next year. Plus, obviously, the children to raise. So a lot of stuff going on.
Well, thanks so much for sparing the time to be with us today. Keith Littlewood, he's a rehabilitation and performance coach based at the Scandinavian Health and Performance Centre there in JLT. Check out his details. We've put them up on our website, dubaii1038.com/dubaitoday. Balanced body, mind. Until the next time, thank you very much.
Always a pleasure. Look forward to seeing you again.
Thanks so much, Keith.